My name is Harry Verizer. I'm at the University of Detroit Mercy. I have been asked to chair the panel on fiscal policy. We have a wonderful selection of speakers. I would like to introduce them, and we'll start with Dr. Warren Coates, is to my far right. Okay, Dr. Coates is retired from the International Monetary Fund in 2003 as Assistant Director of Monetary and Financial Systems Department. He led technical assistance missions to the central banks of over 20 countries. Prior to that, he served as a visiting economist for the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System and to the World Bank's World Development Team. He was assistant professor of economics at the University of Virginia from 1970 to 1975 and received his PhD in economics under Milton Friedman at the University of Chicago. He was director of the Cayman Islands Monetary Authority from 2003 to 2010. He became a senior monetary advisor to the Central Bank of Iraq. That must have been quite a job, from 2004 to 2005, and he was an IMF consultant to the central banks of Afghanistan, 2002 to 14, Kenya, 2007 to 10, Zimbabwe, 2009. I still have some of those dollars of trillion-dollar notes, whatever. I don't think he did that. And he was a Deloitte USA director to the government of Southern Sudan, 2008 to 11. His most recent book is One Currency for Bosnia, Creating the Central Bank of Bosnia and Herzegovina. Okay, the next speaker to my closer right is Vance Glenn. Vance is an economist for the Center for Fiscal Policy of the Texas Public Policy Foundation in Austin, one of the top free market think tanks in the nation. Before joining the foundation, Glenn taught at three universities and one community college across Texas. He's the director of the Missouri Valley Economic Association's Executive Committee and has presented his research findings at its annual meetings as well as other professional organizations. His professional interests include increasing state budget transparency, reforming state property taxes, examining labor market trends, modeling economic activity, and investigating oil and gasoline markets. Ginn received his BBA in economics and accounting with minors in political science and mathematics from Texas Tech. He went on to earn his doctorate in economics from Texas Technological University as well. He successfully published peer review articles in academic journals, including the International Trade Journal and Energy Economics. Okay, and he's commenting on many major outlets. Okay, to my closer right, okay, is Dr. Brian Dmitrovich. Okay, he's the visiting scholar in conservative thought and policy at the University of Colorado in Boulder. That must be quite a task. Okay, I think they used to call it the People's Republic, didn't they, whatever, Boulder? Okay, Dmitrika holds his PhD from Harvard, where he did graduate work in the Department of Economics. He earned his bachelor's degree at Columbia, studying history and mathematics. An associate professor and chair of the Department of History at Sam Houston State, he has written numerous scholarly and popular publications, and he's the author of Econoclast, which I would recommend highly, The Rebels Who Sparked the Supply-Side Revolution and Restored American Prosperity. He's currently co-authoring with Larry Kudlow of CNBC-TV a book called JFK and the Reagan Revolution, A Secret History of American Prosperity. It's a history of John F. Kennedy's tax cut of 64, its origin, context, and influence. Dmitrovich writes a weekly column at Forbes under the byline of Past and Present. His blog is Supply Side Economics Today. Dmitrovich lives in Texas with his wife and children. So starting the, I had made some opening comments about our panel. We're, as you know, we're dealing with the budget of the United States from various aspects, and we'll conclude energy and some other things. Let me just open the comment and get the discussion going. With the end of the Obama administration this year, the country will experience 16 years where there has neither been a budget nor any attempt to control federal spending. There have been two consecutive presidential terms in which the deficit has added to the debt of the United States significantly. Even so-called conservative Congresses and the president seem unwilling completely to take a serious look at federal spending and the exploding national debt. It is hard to set a date when this problem began to assert itself, but we can certainly identify the mechanism by which the United States has fallen into a $19 trillion debt and, according to some estimates, between $60 and $200 trillion of unfunded liabilities. The Founding Fathers were certainly aware of the dangers which are inherent to democracy and its fiscal irresponsibility, as were the ancient philosophers Plato and Aristotle. The Founding Fathers built into the original Constitution checks and balances not only on various governmental agencies, but on the taxing and fiscal policy of what would become the new federal government. They were so concerned and so aware of the dangers of inflation, with the Continental Congress issuing paper money to finance the war, that they wrote into the Constitution that states could not issue currency that was not backed up by gold or silver. Property rights were protected by the Fifth Amendment. Taxation was limited, and the Constitution prevented income and inheritance taxation. Over the period of time, the fiscal brakes were gradually disabled, allowing what would become the democratization of private wealth. This was the goal of the progressive movement. The progressive movement was to remove the brakes. Okay, so that it did produce a runaway train. It began with the passage of the constitutional amendment allowing for the income tax unlimited by rate or base. This opened the door for class warfare, in which parts of the population would use the taxing power of the federal government to their benefit and to the detriment of other members of American society. The cry was, tax the rich and benefit me. What we have seen election by election is politicians buying votes by auctioning off the wealth of some Americans to benefit other Americans. Just look at what's happening in the election today with Sanders and Clinton. Along with the passage of the income tax was the establishment of the Federal Reserve System. This institution allowed the federal government to manipulate the banking system in such a way as to create credit backed up by government bonds, which would allow the expansion of federal spending. In essence, it gave the federal government an unlimited Visa card. At first, there were limitations on the expansion of credit because of the legal requirement of specie backing for reserves. But over time, this limitation, this break, was removed. Since 1913, every fiscal restraint has been disabled step by step. The resources of Americans are now completely up to democratic voting through Congress and the president at the ballot box. There is now no limit to the ability of the federal government to assess the wealth of Americans, either to enrich various interest groups or to support foreign wars. Looking at the economic history, especially of the United States, one can see that war changes currencies. I mentioned the Revolution, the Civil War, led to the issuance of the greenback currency over the backing of gold and silver. In order to finance World War I, the Federal Reserve cut reserve requirements in half, which allowed the expansion of bank credit to finance what scholars see as the major disaster of the 20th century. Interestingly enough, prices doubled during the Great War due to the expansion of the money supply. In fact, when Warren G. Harding was running against the Democrats in 1920, he ran on what was called the 50-cent dollar, because the prices had doubled. The Republicans actually used that as a campaign. They blamed the Democrats. They said, they ruined your dollar. It's now worth 50 cents. In World War II, the reserve requirement of gold behind the dollar again was lowered. The Vietnam War was certainly responsible for Lyndon Johnson removing the silver backing from the dollar and repealing the law that had been passed under the administration of George Washington. Richard Nixon broke the last vestige of the gold standard on August 15, 1971. Not surprisingly, what followed was an inflation by today reaching some, in some cases, of 500%. By the way, that's the same amount of inflation that the Tudor regime at England did, Henry VIII and his daughter, about 500% inflation. It took the Roman Empire about 200 years to do what these characters did in 50. The Iraq War, particularly 2003 to question mark, saw the dollar value in terms of gold plummet. In addition, the wars have generated mountains of new debt. At this point, there is no monetary brakes or legal brakes on the federal budget. The only possible curve to inflation is the Laffer curve. However, as pointed out by, of all people, John Maynard Keynes, the inflation possibility remains. Remember, Keynes, in his earlier works, wrote on money and talked about inflation as the mechanism by which government can deprive its citizens of resources. The famous English economist saw inflation as a means by which they transfer. As the Founding Fathers foreseen, the democracy and the democratization of wealth has now reached its determined end. Congress seems no longer capable or willing to control the federal budget. The last two administrations have been unable to come up with any plan or unwilling. Any attempt to rein in or deal with the explained entitlements will be immediately greeted by a compliant press as being cruel and mean. The political parties will use any means to curb, will use any means not to curb, if one political party attempts to curb spending, it will be used as a weapon against the other party, in order to maintain power. Watching the present electoral process, there seems to be no idea of discipline among any of the candidates. Each one promises to expand spending on welfare. They'll go into another war. In addition, the Supreme Court this week issued an opinion allowing union interest groups to raid the salaries of government workers in order to support political campaigns. It is this mechanism which has led to the fiscal irresponsibility in states like California and Illinois. The unions use the money obtained by force from government workers to elect politicians who will enact budgets favorable to union demands. This cost is passed on to the taxpayer. The entitlement programs have been put into place on the false premise that economic depopulation would somehow provide the magic elixir of growth to solve the problem. However, the United States, as well as most of the world, is becoming demographically stagnant as populations are not reproducing themselves. It was easy to vote for benefits which the next administration could pay for. Think of it. They haven't been born, so they can't vote. As they come into the world, they find that the burden is placed on them for those who are much older. But this only works as long as the younger population expands or there is significant economic expansion in terms of increased productivity, otherwise known as economic growth. In addition, due to the stagnant population and the government mismanagement of the economy, economic growth is stagnant. Every issue of the financial press testifies to this. This week's Financial Times, by the way, this week's also Morning Wall Street Journal, has an article attesting to the fact that the Fed cannot raise rates because of their fear of a stagnant economy. In addition, the much-vaunted monetary and fiscal policy of modern economics actually produced the Great Depression. These much-vaunted tools have been unable to stimulate the economy. In fact, according to the Pew Foundation report, the middle class is shrinking. And for most Americans, their real income, particularly of Black Americans, has dropped. This has led to a justified questioning of the tools of contemporary economics. The modern interpretation of Keynes seems unable to come up with a solution. The Monetarist School of Chicago has been noticeably silent on the present economic condition. And the Austrian School, which does have solutions, has been ignored. Our discussion today features three prominent economists who will put forth proposed solutions to the present doldrums. The time is late, and as the philosopher Plato pointed out, the beast of democracy is out of the cage. Okay, I'd like to call on, we'll start at the far right, Dr. Coates.
Thank you very much.